This is Dr. Charles Parker, and you're listening to Core Brain Journal. It's a place where I connect both fresh discoveries and interesting different perspectives from advanced mind science with the realities of real people and everyday life down on Main Street.
Well, welcome, folks. Here we are one more time at Core Brain Journal, and we're very pleased today to have a very interesting person who's going to share some values-oriented relationship issues, which are always an interesting topic of conversation. And today, Amy McKay is going to be with us. Amy, welcome.
Thank you.
So happy to have you on board. So I'm going to do a brief intro, and then we're going to ask you a little bit more about yourself, where you are, and what you do. So Amy is a spiritual wellness coach, and she's very interested in balanced relationships and healing relationships from that spiritual perspective. And as we all know, anybody that's been in this business for any period of time realizes that to get well, we have to have some kind of a transcendent view of who we are as people rather than hitting the same old, same old. So welcome, Amy. And could you tell us just a little bit about your personal life, who you are, where you are?
Well, I'm Amy McKay, and I live in Omaha, Nebraska. I am the mother of two beautiful girls. I have a 13-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I spend majority of my time with them or working or in school.
You're busy. Now, are you're in corn country? Where are you in?
I'm in Omaha, so I'm not quite corn country, but yeah, kind of. You know, Lincoln, we have the Cornhuskers football, so yeah, I'm close to there. That's the big thing in Nebraska, football, I suppose, college football.
Well, I'm an old Missouri guy, so we went up to Nebraska once in a while, and it's beautiful, beautiful country out there. So let's get started with really talking about one question that occurred to me when I was reading your bio, and I think it'd be important for our listeners because it's language that you're very familiar with, but I myself wasn't familiar with, and that's the concept of a knee holistic health expert coach. What is it's spelled NE hyphen holistic. What kind of?
I don't know what she has there. I don't know what that NE is. A holistic life coach is really someone that focuses not just on all aspects of your mind, body, spirit, and emotional health. Without going into, I'm obviously not a therapist, but I'm interested in all of those aspects of your life.
Great. It's just a typo.
Yeah, I think it's a typo. I'm not sure.
So bad. Yeah. Okay. So then the next question is, what's your mission? What do you really want to accomplish with your work? What's your objective when you get with individuals? Do you do individual coaching, couples coaching? How does all that work?
I do mostly individual, although I would like to do some group coaching. And the goal would be to actually bring some of this to the corporate world. I've been doing some research on that. I think that there can be a lot of change there. But the intention is always to empower the client to figure out their issues on their own. Coaching's about asking the right questions so that it's a journey of self-discovery for that individual. And then they figure out basically what they need. Although my interest is largely in spiritual healing, so I do have sessions that are not geared towards that. They're geared towards me doing something else that includes me, like providing resources and education. And coaching also teaches tools so that people can live successful lives, happy and healthy, successful lives.
So
people don't always know what they want. I think they are usually a lot of clients come to me and they say something, but when you start asking questions, that's not at all what they were. That's not really where they're at.
So give us an example of what you're talking about there.
I had a young girl call for personal training when I was still doing personal training. And she, I asked a few questions. And before, personal training wasn't at all what she needed. She needed some guidance on how to become more active and how to eat healthier and more about finding balance than she needed. She was a college student working. She didn't need to add a personal trainer into her schedule. She needed someone to help her find balance so that she could eat healthy. And she didn't want to even to work out. She wanted to dance. She didn't want to lift weights or do something that you'd do with a personal trainer. But she thought that's what she wanted until I asked her the right questions.
the right question.
Yeah. Really, well, and that's kind of difficult. Coaching's about digging deeper, you know, having someone have to think really deep on their own.
Well, I think a lot of people just don't have any idea about how to think about things and actually put the package together.
Very stuck.
Yeah, with relationships, there's so many things that are taken for granted, and ordinary conversation and marriage, or you know, whatever, you say the vows and everything else is taken for granted after that. And there's so many issues that have to do with negotiation strategies and really balanced living, so that you're not swinging affectively, emotionally to one side or the other. So when you work with a person spiritually, could you tell us a little more specifically about that? I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a straight traditional religious approach.
Nothing religious about it. It's more about helping people connect to who they truly are. That's where the core values comes into play, is figuring out who you really are. People are happiest when they know who they are at a core level, because then then you're able to be authentic. And I really, really, really firmly believe that if you know who you are, understand who you are, and you think, speak, and act in line with your core values, that you're really successful. You live a really empowered life. And your relationships are much better.
You've found yourself. You know, over on our side of the woods, we talk about metacognition, because you're actually thinking. Now, metacognition is really only the thinking part of it. It isn't the practice part of it, but metacognition is thinking about thinking. So you observe yourself, how you're actually handling the reality of your life.
That's really powerful, because it allows you to be in a position then to choose whether or not you're going to react or respond. If you're observing yourself, that's one of the most powerful self-awareness techniques that you can do.
So do you have a specific methodology that you encourage, or how do you actually accomplish that with
I try to get people to meditate, actually.
Oh,
because
good.
Meditation, yeah. One of the main benefits, meditation has hundreds of benefits technically. However, one of the main things is awareness is one of the benefits that comes. I use the analogy that it's much like going to the gym. You know, you go to the gym and you work out, and you have physiological changes, and you feel differently, and you feel better, and you walk out feeling good, and you know you've done something. However, you don't walk out of the gym the size 4 like you planned. There's a process there, right? And meditation is the same thing. Physiological things change, your brain changes, physically changes. You'll feel better. However, awareness is something that comes with the practice of meditation, and that's why it's called a practice. It's not meditation perfect, it's meditation practice. Everybody just practices.
So that's interesting, Amy. So then what type of meditation? I mean, there are meditation, transcendental meditation, there's Zen meditation. What type of practice do you encourage, and why?
Usually, I just try to teach people to do some sort of, I teach them to create a relaxation space in their mind. That's one of the ones I teach. And that's just a guided visualization so that they can go back to that every day. I also teach a heart-centered one. Joseph Chilton Pierce is one of my favorite authors, and he talks about the Heart-Mind Matrix is one of my favorite books. And he talks about the heart and brain being connected. So I teach people to be focused, so they enhances their intuition, a heart meditation. And then I also just give them resources to, like Deepak and Oprah do some phenomenal stuff, and to teach them like a mantra, a Sanskrit mantra or something like that, so that they learn, or some breath work. So there's a bunch of different ways. I found that not everybody meditates the same or finds it, not everybody feels the same way. Certain meditations work better for certain people than others.
So you help them find the quiet place.
Find the quiet place so they can eventually shut off the... And people are funny. They're always like, well, I don't know if I'm doing it right. I'm always thinking I'm doing it wrong. I'm like, the idea is to be thinking something else, not be worried about what you're thinking so that those thoughts go away. But it's a practice. And I wasn't that great at it either. It took a long time before I was able to... And I still sometimes have moments, but it did take a long time before I was sincerely able to understand the benefits and make it of worthwhile. You know, the Dalai Lama says that if we taught every 8-year-old in the world to meditate, that we would eliminate violence from the world in one generation. That's pretty powerful.
That is powerful.
Yeah. So I've taught my, I haven't taught my four-year-old. I think she teaches me things, but I did teach my 13-year-old when she was about nine how to meditate. So.
Oh, how's she doing with it?
Well, you know, she's 13. I don't think she's doing much with it at all right now, but hopefully she comes back to it.
You get a little mastery and you can go back to it. Like,
you can go back to it. 13 is, yeah, 13's a whole nother story.
This is a tough time. So then how do you, I was interested in that part of your bio and what you were talking about, but I was also quite interested in this whole, and this is a little on the personal side, but the whole interstitial cystitis. Mm-hmm. And the fibromyalgia part of your story, because we see so many individuals, obviously women on interstitial cystitis, but who just absolutely bang their head against the wall with seeing people and getting symptomatic treatment, but don't really understand what to do about either or both of those two very difficult conditions.
I really personally, based off my experience, there were a couple of different things going on. One of them was a toxicity issue. I didn't realize that my diet was full of toxins. I didn't understand that there were hormones and antibiotics in my meat. I didn't understand that there were nitrites and nitrates in my, you know, deli meat. I was eating sandwiches every day. There were a number of things. I didn't realize that. Actually, what happened was one day, and hormones, those would be the big things, diet and hormones. My hormones were messed up and my diet was killing me. So eliminate, you know, getting my hormones balanced, I do herbal type things and I do, I follow an organic diet. I buy my meat from farmers. Those things, actually in a month, I was feeling better. I also do baking soda sometimes if I eat something. You know, sometimes you have to go to a wedding or you eat at a family's house or something. And that doesn't usually bother me now, but occasionally something will. And I just do baking soda and water and that seems to take care of it. And I also had some issues with dairy and gluten. So I have to be kind of cautious with the dairy and gluten. I eat raw milk cheese if I eat cheese. I eat whole milk, yogurt, those sorts of things. So it's a very real diet that I follow.
You didn't know this, Amy, but I was waiting to ask you about that because this is what we see so often in so many people who are refractory even with psych meds.
It was really, really hard. Interstitial cystitis. Fibromyalgia was rough, but it wasn't it was depressing. I was more feeling suicidal with interstitial cystitis because that is such a it's one thing to feel bad, feel tired, and be achy. It's another to not be able to function. You know, I don't know how you can hold a job. I couldn't sleep. I mean, there was a lot of things that didn't work. So my heart goes out to women with that. But I have helped some women, but a lot of people aren't really committed to, you got to be committed to changing your lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be committed. There's not a pill to fix it. And there are some women that do well. When I was learning about it, they were doing some sort of, I had nine urologists, none of which did any good. And there were women that were doing some sort of, I don't know what it was, they were installing something in their body, some electronic device that was, I can understand why that would work, because I think in terms of quantum physics and vibrational frequency and resonance, so I can see how that might be helpful. However, and if you get relief, whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be.
What did they insert it in the bladder?
In the bladder. So it was vibrating, basically. So I'm thinking it was a distraction. There must have been something to do with the distraction of the nerves there. So it had to have interrupted the signal. But it doesn't. To me, it doesn't really solve the problem. You know.
Yeah, one would think that an infection's an infection.
Right.
And
I don't.
Infection.
I wonder if there isn't. The testing isn't necessarily. Mine started as a bacterial infection that never went away with antibiotics, and then the test never came back as a bacterial infection anymore. So you wonder if there isn't some sort of bacterial or virus or something there that is causing that inflammation.
Well,
that doesn't show up.
I don't have a lot of experience with interstitial cystitis because I really don't do the medical side of it, but I've noticed that people do get better if they are really very strict with their diet. Because inflammation from the diet throws down the body's ability to really fend off other inflammatory processes, and they get better. They interestingly start to feel better, and But they have to really, as you said just a moment ago, be really religious about staying on the diet.
And it didn't take, you know, I was super, it didn't take, I would have issues that first year, but after a year or two on that diet, if I follow, it's referred to as a modified elimination diet, if I eat that way 75% of the time, I'm fine. I can have a glass of wine. I can have some chocolate chip cookies or whatever. There's just balance there. I feel like it inspired me. It kind of forced me to, I probably prevent a whole lot of future health issues by ensuring that I eat that way now, you know? I don't regret it. I don't feel like it's a sacrifice. The first year felt like a sacrifice, but it doesn't at all now.
Well, it's because you feel better. And it builds on itself, you know.
It does. It definitely does. And I think that the meditation part played a part. I think the fitness played a part. I just had to become proactive in my own health and realize that somebody else wasn't going to heal me. That was the thing. I was looking to a doctor to heal me, and that wasn't going to be how that was going to occur. There's 9 urologists didn't have an answer. So, and I saw the rheumatologist I saw from fibromyalgia said, well, you're just going to, and I was not even 30 years old at the time. He was like, you're just going to have to rest. And I'm thinking, I have a newborn baby and I'm not even 30 years old. And you're going to tell me I have to slow down now? You know, that wasn't a reality for me. So,
well, this is part of the evolution of what's going on with participatory medicine, really, where an individual really does take more responsibility for themselves.
I wish people would be more active. You know, that's really unfortunate. I watch a lot of people get a cold and they can't handle the cold. They're, instead of taking some emergency vitamin C or doing, you know, echinacea or whatever, doing something natural, they want a doctor to prescribe them a drug and fix it. They don't want it. Nobody wants to do anything to prevent it in the first place.
I've had people cry when I told them I had, and actually be angry with me for 6 months. I'm the messenger. I told them that milk was completely off their diet. I mean, they're redlined across the entire board on IgG testing for milk. And they're ready to throw things at me and cry and storm out of the office. I mean, all I did was tell them this is the problem.
And you're helping them, right?
Yeah, they were, in fact, addicted to milk. There are specific opiate receptors that can be stimulated by milk.
Uh-huh.
And they get caught up in that. So as a personal trainer, to add this other dimension, do you have people do specific physical activities as well as meditation, diet?
I do what I used to. I don't do any personal training anymore. It really kind of bored me. Mm-hmm. But I send them. I have several references for personal training. My brother's a bodybuilder, and I have a female friend who's my age, who a little bit younger than I am. She has a really awesome online program that she designs, and she does individual training. So her program's really, really, she can do far better than I can. I started with personal training, but I wanted to be a holistic personal trainer, and nobody in the personal training business is really doing that. They have this diet stuff that was not in my belief system. But I do help people set goals or design their own programs. If it's real basic stuff and introductory stuff, I do that. And fitness is a big part of my life. I just have that whole spending the day in the gym or going to people's houses for workouts was not for me.
Yeah.
But there are people that do it and do it well, just not me.
Well, I think the thing is you're deeper and you're more thoughtful. And, you know, there's a limitation. If you're just doing something physical, you're only on top of a part of the problem.
I wanted more of the energetic healing and the mindfulness, the brain function, and those sorts of things they're just more interesting to me. You know, I have to do continuing education all the time, and the thought of having to do stuff for exercise science just isn't entertaining to me. So, but I'll sit in all kinds of other classes.
Well, you know, we're going to have that book in the show notes if people are interested that you mentioned, because it's my experience that the heart-mind matrix is a very, I didn't know that book, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Oh, you will. I think that someone like you would definitely enjoy it. It's not an easy read. You have to have some level of, I don't know what to say. I think anyone could read it, but it took me, it's so deep that I was like, I kept reading it. I highlighted it. It's just my favorite. It's definitely my favorite book, probably ever.
Well, if it's your favorite and the way you're talking about it, then it sounds like we're on the same path. It's definitely something to read. And we're looking forward to, by the way, listeners, we're going to have, Amy's given us a PDF on core values that we're going to have, and it'll be available if you want to pick it up by just doing the putting in the following URL. It'll come right up to your machine, and that's corebrainjournal.com/020download. That's Amy's program. So if you do /020download, all one word, and we'll have that available for you so you can download her PDF on core values. So what would you say was the biggest turning point in your life in terms of what shaped you up to, like, I have to do this? I mean, obviously the fibromyalgia and the interstitial cystitis. Did you have a person in your life that was a guide for you, that helped you make the transition to thinking about things more comprehensively?
You know, I don't know if there was a specific person. It's amazing how experiences will just lead you one thing to another. I went, when I was so sick, I had the day where I couldn't get out of, I couldn't walk. I was in so much pain. And that was just a turning. And my now 13-year-old was, she was a baby at the time. So that was the day where I said, that's it. And then I just kept looking in places. I found a doctor here who was trying to do a, she had just started a holistic, she was a traditional medical doctor, but had tried to switch her practice to a holistic practice. So she introduced me to a lot of things, but it started with fitness. I was already, I had gotten really big into from that point on, and then the nutrition, and then the spiritual part. And it was one thing led to another. And then, as always, I don't know about you, but my personal life always guides my business. So things will occur in my personal life, and it'll lead me to have to do some work in my personal life, which leads me to doing work in my professional life. And I had a not so wonderful marriage of 15 years. So that's where my relationship and a lot of the spiritual healing, because I was just in, I went places that I didn't know that pushed me to a whole new, to being a whole new person. So, and then of course you have to play, you can't change in your personal life and not change your professional life.
Isn't that true? You know, yeah. And mine is somewhat similar in the sense that I'm in the office all day, every day. And what changes me is when somebody comes in with something I don't know about. That's why I was digging into that typo at the beginning of the conversation.
Typo. I was wondering about your time, like, what the heck did I? Who knows what I have so many. My list of credentials is gotten to be kind of lengthy, and I'm getting a new website soon. I'm meeting with my website guy because I said there's just so much stuff on here and so much stuff we don't have on here. I said I think we just need to scratch this and start over. So
yeah, well, I think we're very similar in this regard, Amy, because when you find something you don't know and somebody says, have you heard about this, whatever,
I'm so curious.
The next level is, where do you take it? And I think what happens is we have, as a society, because education tends to be a passive experience. Either you go to school and get it or you don't, and there's right. No option. There are very few options. I mean, increasingly, education is a much different thing nowadays than it was when we were younger, but it's still very vertical. It's still a vertical. You know, there's an authority teaching you something,
right,
and you're in a downline situation of either getting the information or not getting the information, as opposed to actually critical thinking. Critical thinking is really taking on the larger perspective of the whole process of what that instructor is saying, how they're delivering it, what the content is, what the lifelong implications are, the larger questions.
I'm not really pleased with our educational system. I think it needs a little bit of revamping. My 13-year-old was Montessori. And then I homeschooled with a Waldorf program for 2 years, and she just started traditional public middle school, which I have no issues. Her middle school is phenomenal, and my 4-year-old is in a Montessori program. So I think Rudolf Steiner and Maria Montessori were phenomenal at bringing different types of education. So that actually Joseph Chilton Pierce talks about that too, and about those two particular teachers. You'll find it interesting because he talks about brain function and where we've messed up as a society and what we need to do for the evolution of our brain for us to be the fullest that we can be.
No, that is interesting. Yeah. Well, I share the opinion about Montessori. My two grandchildren have been out in California. They went to a very, very interesting Montessori school. and they're in. They've just transferred to yet another school where the emphasis is on creativity and learning and really questioning, thinking about larger picture items. So they're very interesting to have a conversation with because it's like...
Yeah, they're very bright. They have a whole different... And intuition's a really big thing, too. I'm really... I think that we've lost sight of... And Finland is an example of a country doing phenomenal things with children and education. We've lost sight of the whole picture in the United States, and it's become a lot about testing, and test scores only show so much and only one type of intelligence, maybe even not even to the degree that they're looking for. So I would like to see more creativity and intuition put into schools. If you can connect to your intuition, you're going to have all the answers anyway.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I'm not going to get into the current political situation.
No.
But if you think about it, conservatism is very vertical management. It looks like it isn't, but it definitely is very vertical management. And then so if somebody's going to do something like we're talking about, it's going to sound so democratic, it's going to sound so liberal. You know, and if you're and if you're a conservative person and want to maintain control, then you're going to have a problem with any kind of evolution with the
evolution of it being not exactly a specific way. Well, and I'm just always about pushing the boundary. So I want to see what can be done. Like, I'm curious.
Well, we certainly share that. I really appreciate you coming on board. Let's take a moment to talk about how people can connect with you, your website, and where they can go to actually connect with you.
Sure. My website is www.amymckay, that's A-M-Y-M-C, another C-A-E, .com. So, and my email is creativewellness@cox.net, C-O-X.net.
You're putting that email out there. My gosh, you're a risky person.
Yeah, who knows who will email me, right?
Now you'll see what happens.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for coming on board. We've really covered a lot of material in a short period of time. And I think that your entire program sounds very interesting. And it's going to be very interesting for you to take it to that next step. I think that corporations indeed might be the way to actually spread the message on a larger scale. Because you look what's going on with Facebook, for example, and some of these folks are just saying, look, we just have to do this a different way. And
I would like to. I think relationships in the corporate world could use some improving. So it'd be interesting to see what I could do there.
Well, there are pockets of health, but then you've got this vertical management system, which is certainly rampant in medicine. You know, it's really very, very strict groupthink. And if you're either in the group or you're not in
the
group. And if you're not in the group, you must be some kind of a quack. My feeling about all of that is that their good peer-reviewed literature is out there on all kinds of perspectives of how we can help individuals grow and improve their lives. And we just need to think more comprehensively instead of being so protective, living in the groupthink situation.
I agree.
So listen, I'm going to sign off. I look forward to talking to you again. We could get a full report on where you go with the corporate initiative.
Yeah, that would be great.
So thank you very much. We look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks for listening to Corebrain Journal. We're working every day behind the scenes to bring you reports that connect research benches with those street trenches. Here we share the complexity of mind science because, as you know, details really do matter. One of the most pervasive, misunderstood challenges is how commonplace medications, like those written for ADHD, are used so regularly without clear guidelines. If you think you'd like more specifics, take a minute to download my 2-page PDF packed with video links and references on the absolute essentials of how to start ADHD medications. They're easily available at corebrainjournal.com/start. Thanks for listening. Do connect and stay tuned. Together we can make a difference.